Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, September 30th, 2012. This is episode 914. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love our cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup cost, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget's worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest phone at gazelle.com.
Well, hello there. How are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And we are ready to launch once again into the tech offensive. We will talk today about computers, yes, Windows, Mac, Linux. We will talk about cell phones, certainly. Home theater, very likely. Digital photography, without a doubt. It's all grist for the mill here at the beautiful Tech Guy Labs. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO if you have a question you'd like to ask. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. So any of you listening on any of our 180 stations in the Tech Guy Network, you can call free. And if you're outside, if you're listening on the Internet, if you're outside the U.S., use your Skype or your VoIP client and call that number, and it shouldn't cost you anything because it's toll-free. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. So we talked a little bit last show about Apple's new iPhone 5. I'll give you the quick summary of my thoughts on it. It's pretty nicely made. I have to say it's kind of impressive how elegant Apple's manufacture has gotten. I mean, just really beautiful. Those slaves in China are doing such a nice job now. However, and I say that facetiously, except, you know, we don't really know, what the working conditions are. I suspect not great. However, here's the question. Should you spend your hard-earned cash, your loot on this? What are the primarily new features? Well, it is faster. The screen is one icon row taller, 176 pixels taller. Not wider, just taller. And it's a little thinner and a little lighter. And most importantly, probably to those of you who are in an area where you can get LTE, this is the first Apple phone that supports LTE. What is LTE? It's a nonsense acronym. I like it. It's a nonsense acronym. It stands for long-term evolution. Huh? Doesn't have anything to do with the dinosaurs or Darwin. It has to do with the fact that the data networks are getting faster. The truth is we don't have true LTE here in the U.S. True LTE, according to the official definition, is 100 megabits per second download. That's really, 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 really fast. We don't get anything like that. But the ITU, the International Telecommunications Union, told the United States carriers, well, you can call it 4G. You can call it LTE. Actually, I guess it is LTE, but you can call it 4G or the next generation if it's significantly faster. It is. So Verizon, AT&T, and to a lesser degree, Sprint, have LTE areas, geographies, where you can get this faster connection. If you can get it, it's a lot faster. If you're in an area where you can get LTE on your particular carrier, it's probably worth getting the upgrade to the iPhone 5 if you use the cell phone data much, because it's really fast. I mean, so fast that it might be, in fact, in many cases, I think is faster than your home internet. It's faster than mine, and I have very fast internet. Let me just now, of course, your mileage varies on cell phone networks. Comes and goes depending on other people, factors, how many people are using it. Right now, for instance, my LTE is very slow on the iPhone, so slow that it wouldn't be worth buying an iPhone. But wow, that's terrible. 15 millisecond ping time, which is good, but 0.68 megabits download. Uploads almost 10 megabits, so that's just weird, right? Means there's somebody in the neighborhood using it to download movies or watch Netflix or something. So it varies, but that is a significant upgrade for the iPhone. If you have an iPhone 4S and you don't have LTE in your neck of the woods, or you don't care about LTE, I wouldn't worry about it. Not for one extra icon row. If you have an iPhone 4, you're due for an upgrade anyway, maybe it's worth it. Might be worth it. Now, see, now I'm getting 14.5 megabits down. So you can see that this is typical of cell networks. They vary quite a bit in speed. The big story, though, the one you're going to read over and over again, is the Maps thing. And Apple uncharacteristically has apologized. On Friday, Tim Cook wrote a letter. It's on the Apple front page saying, "We blew it. We're sorry. We really made a mistake. It's terrible." And saying, and unprecedentedly, saying, maybe you should use Bing or Google for a while. What? I've never heard Apple. That's unheard of. Maybe we blew it with Maps. Coming off of the announcement, a few weeks ago, where they said this is the best map program in history. It's the best ever. It's incredible. So that's quite a turnaround. Some people are blaming a particular Apple executive named Scott Forstall. They're saying it's Scott's fault. You always have to have a fault guy, right? Philip Elmer DeWitt, who is a longtime Apple observer, says that the problem is that Scott Forstall has been overselling Apple technologies. Same thing with Siri a year ago, right? They did call it a beta. They said it's early, but it's frankly not been as good as it could be. And now the Apple Maps. Jean-Louis Gasset, writing in his blog Monday Note, he's a former Apple president, said, "Forstall's demo was flawless. 2D, 3D maps, turn-by-turn navigation, spectacular flyovers, but not a word from the stage about Apple's or the app's limitation, no self-deprecating wink, no admission that Maps isn't an infant that needs to learn to crawl before walking, running, and lapping the front runner, Google Maps." Now, remember, Google Maps, when it first came out, wasn't so good either, but that was 5 years ago. So Apple's got some catching up to do. Apple told us that it was the most beautiful, powerful mapping service ever. And now they're saying, "No, well, we're sorry, it's not. Sorry you bought the iPhone." It is the fastest selling iPhone of all time, 5 million in the first 2 days, or first 3 days. That's pretty good. First weekend, 5 million iPhones sold. I've been using it since it came out a week ago, and nonstop, because I feel that's my duty to try it, and I can't wait to get back to my Samsung Galaxy S3, and I'm really looking forward to the announcement in a few weeks of the Galaxy Note 2. I'll probably buy that. I do like LTE, though. I'm sticking with Verizon. We have LTE here, not on Verizon, not AT&T. I do like that. I do like that speed. So I'll stick with that, but I think I'll probably switch over. So my recommendation, if you're already in the Apple ecosystem, go ahead. Live it up. Especially if you're due for an upgrade. If it's going to cost you $600 or $700, I have to say it's probably not worth it. And if you're trying to use Apple Maps, it might be a good idea to download one of the other choices. Apple, on its website, gives you some choices. They actually, in the Apple Store now, they have a whole page of better mapping apps that you could use. Wow. Wow. That's just kind of, I've recommended Waze many times, W-A-Z-E. That's free. If you want a paid program that has really excellent maps, MotionX's GPS Drive is great. All of these are recommended, by the way, by Apple. MapQuest, in their map apps section on the store. GPS by Telenav, Scout by Telenav, Garmin USA, Navigon, Copilot, Bing from Microsoft, AT&T Navigator, Magellan, basically anything but Apple. Wow. But you do have other choices. What you don't have is another choice for Street View. Unless you do it in the browser. And I think a lot of people will miss that. Not the first time Apple's fallen on its face, but a very public failure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That's why I had service a minute ago. I know it's been hard to call me. You've tried without any luck. I swear I'm not getting them. My reception sucks. So you'll decide to text me.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little autocorrect mishap in that song. I love that. I love that autocorrect stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. And the website, James DeRuovo is back. He had his little scouting camp out yesterday. So we're going to catch up on the show notes, and he's back, and we'll have the show notes today at techguylabs.com. This is episode 914. 914. Wow. So people are, your mileage, just one more thing on the maps. Your mileage may vary. I have it. I used them a couple of times. I don't travel around a lot, and they were accurate, but I live in the San Francisco Bay Area where you could be sure Apple made sure the data was accurate. But there are some. A computer scientist wrote a script to test Apple Maps in Ontario, which is where Toronto is in Canada, and found that it was really kind of shockingly sparse. Now, what Apple says is, well, it's going to get better as you use it. But I guess the question is that really our job as users to fix it? So the computer scientist wrote some code to look at Apple Maps in Ontario. Jason Matheson. He searched 2,028 cities and towns in Ontario, the province of Ontario, Canada. Big province, important province in Canada. It's not like we're not talking backwater here. 688 cities of the 2,000 are not even on the map. 551 are incorrect, wrong country, street names that are similar to town names, things like that. 389 were close, but not quite right. For example, turn by turn might send you off a bridge, but you'd get rescued close to where you want to be. So out of the 2,028 cities and towns in Ontario, Canada, only 400, one-fifth were accurate. 20%. That's terrible. Now, I'm content to use it in the Bay Area, but that's if I were in Ontario, I'd have a question. And, somebody else pointed out, if you look at the icon on the iPhone 5 for the new maps icon, which they changed slightly, it looks somewhat like the old one. But if you look at it closely, it shows one infinite loop where Apple is. And the line that it shows you to drive over the overpass and then jump off onto the highway. It's wrong. I think Steve Jobs would have noticed that. I just have to think that Steve, who was so kind of particular about things like color gradients, might have noticed that the icon has you driving off a bridge. Doesn't bode well. But again, there's plenty of other maps you can use on the iPhone. That's minor. Right. Just my suggestion would be, unless you absolutely trust the maps in your area, not to use them, use somebody else's. And I think even Apple is telling you that right now. Andrew in Birmingham, Alabama. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
I have a question. I'm trying to extend my Wi-Fi signal about 2,000 feet from my wireless access point.
Ooh, that's a long way.
Yeah, I've got a barn on the other side of our property, and where I do work on my vehicles and various woodworking stuff and all that. And I'd like to have some type of internet connection out there for like streaming internet radio or something like that.
Do you have power out there?
Yes, I do have power out there.
So you've drawn power lines from the main house, or has it come from the street?
Yeah, it's coming from they ran a power pole out there, the company did.
Oh, okay, that won't help you then. If it were drawn off of the main house power, you could use power line networking. It'd probably be better. 2,000 feet is quite a distance. Wi-Fi 802.11 Wi-Fi is rated for 150 feet on A, B, and G, and N is supposedly maybe 400 or 500 feet. But 2,000 feet, you need a high-powered antenna. You probably want a directional antenna. But here's the problem. That'll get the signal out to the house or the barn, but you got to get it back. So you need a signal directional antenna going back, too. Antennas on both sides.
Yeah, I kind of figure I need a similar setup on the other end to get it
exactly.
back.
Exactly. I think a lot of people don't understand that you can't just use a directional transmitter from the house because it's a two-way conversation. So you're going to need an awful lot. I don't even know if it's even practical. There are a couple places to look. Radio Labs is my favorite. Radiolabs.com. They're okay. experts in extending Wi-Fi, and they have a lot of articles and support and conversation, as well as products on here that will, you know, this is what people want to do, right? I mean, you know, most people, if the Wi-Fi is working fine, they don't go to places like radiolabs.com, but they have all sorts of solutions for long-distance Wi-Fi, and I would trust them if they say it'll work. Read carefully, you know, the directional antennas. You'll need to get a special adapter for the antenna to get to your Wi-Fi card or access point. But you know, it's a good project.
No, I think it's a parabolic antenna is probably one.
Yeah, because it's directional. But again, they talk about all of this on the website. So I would look at the wireless antennas. They sell all kinds, from the rubber duck antennas to parabolic, directional, highly directional. Yagi is very directional. Those are high gain and very directional, so you might want a Yagi on both sides.
Is this something that, or am I going to have like an inline,
transmitter? Power, yeah, you probably have to have an additional transmitter, yep.
Like a 1 or 2 watt power booster?
Yeah. could do it. I mean, it's absolutely you could do it. The world record for Wi-Fi, the land record is 56 kilometers. So,
wow.
But that was using this giant Wi-Fi grid antenna, but 200 milliwatts. So, and they sell this antenna; it's $124. So, you can do it. You could do it. It's just going to take a little research. Radiolabs.com is a good place. They know a lot more. I don't have any experience doing this. I mean, we've done it for fun. We've done experiments, you know, turning a Pringles can into a directional antenna and stuff. But I've never. And as a ham, I have a little bit of experience with Yagis and other kinds of directional antenna, but I've never tried to do this like on a long-term thing. 2,000 feet is quite the distance. Quite the distance. But anyway, now Dr. Decibel, who has a good name for this kind of thing, is suggesting something called the Air Max. Meow! From UBNT.com. This looks pretty serious. Pretty serious stuff. Now, this is for MIMO TDMA, so this would be not using Wi-Fi, but using another solution, which gives you really high power throughput. This is mostly intended for wireless ISPs as opposed to end users, I think. Hey, coming up, Chris Marquardt, our photo guide, about an hour from now. More of your calls to 8888 Ask Leo. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, you asked me an important question. Yes, RC Archandra. There is
Vertical. Folks, have you heard
of Ring Central? I forgot. I got to talk about this phone system we have here. We love our phone system from Ring Central. I've showed you the phone, right?
You seen it?
So it just looks like a regular business phone, doesn't it? I had to figure out when we moved to this studio, I thought, I never really built an office before or dealt with this before, and I didn't know what to do with her phone system. And I'm supposed to be the tech guy, right? So I thought, well, the burden was on my shoulders. They all looked at me. They said, well, what are you going to do for phones? I said, you're looking at me? I don't know. What were we thinking, John? What did we think we were going to do? I don't even remember. I thought everybody was using cell phones in the cottage. Yeah. But I can't make you use your personal phone.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? This is a great compromise. We got Ring Central, and you could still use your cell phone, but we pay for the calls. The calls appear to be coming from the office. So the caller ID is our 800 number. So it doesn't look like, hey, who are these people calling me? It's Twit. Your voicemails come through on your smartphone. There's a Ring Central app that's awesome. So this was a perfect solution. It's a phone system that lets you do everything you do with a PBX in the basement, except not. It's a cloud-based phone system, which is awesome. Zero startup costs. Ring Central starts at $20 per month per user. That's what we pay. So we add a new staffer, $20 a month. That's it. And then the great thing is you just plug the phone into the wall and it works. Right now, you can try it free for 30 days at ringcentral.com. Use the promo code TWIT. And there's a special offer. This is just for our listeners. You get, when you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So your phone costs are cut in half. And like I said, these are real phones. You get faxes in your inbox. We just love this Ring Central solution. It's really fantastic. You can also call them. 800, we have a special number just for you. 800-543-9980. I want you to test drive Ring Central for 30 days. 800-543-9980. It was so easy for us to use. And I tell you, the best proof is that here we are a year later loving it. Loving it. You wouldn't know that we don't have, a PBX in the basement. We've got, well, you would, because we were much more capability. When Chad calls somebody, it shows up as the office number. He loves it. The voicemails come into his cell phone or via his email. RingCentral.com. Use the offer code TWIT for 30 days free and that special deal. Buy one, get one free on the phones, up to 20 phones, or call 800-543-9980. RingCentral.com. Kyle's teasing me now because I admitted during the break that I was actually flying to Denver to see Madonna on October 18th. Yes. I'm so excited. So excited. It's my girlfriend wants to see her. It's not me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Carl in Newport Beach, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. Good to see the clock's back.
I put the clock back. We had a I don't know. Have other people had this problem? I use like these radio clocks that are supposed to automatically set themselves to WWV, the Fort Collins, Colorado time. Bong, and it goes through the radio. And I used to wear watches like that stuff, but for some reason the clocks, I have to put it in the window for it to set itself. And then I don't know why, but it's a minute off sitting in here. So much for a atomic clock. They're really not atomic, obviously. I wouldn't want an atomic clock in my office, but they're radio clocks that pick up the signal from the atomic clock at Fort Collins. So yes, and I for some reason we have it on camera, and I don't know why, but for the people who watch the video, it's apparently very, very important. More important than the Apple Maps fiasco. So what can I do for you, Carl?
Well, I'm looking for advice on what all-in-one printer to get for my sister who's finishing up college right now. She's in fashion design. So she's looking for something that does both black and white and color. She's got a MacBook Air as her, only computer. So I don't think she has it plugged in most of the time. I think if she's got it on the Wi-Fi.
So she does have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Okay, so she'll definitely want a Wi-Fi-enabled printer, which most new printers are.
Mm-hmm.
And you said she wants an all-in-one?
Yeah, an all-in-one printer, so something, well, not really, she doesn't need to fax anything, but just the printer and the scanner, like scanning in photographs, things like that is part of her major. So from what I found out, she's going to use it occasionally, but when those occasions come around, you know, like finals and projects and things like that, she's going to be printing a fair bit.
So it's probably going to be an inkjet printer. Certainly, if she does any photo printing, she'll want an inkjet printer because they do. They, in most cases, they can do photo printing as well with the right paper. And the issue with inkjets is the cost of consumables. The price per page is higher because the ink is so expensive on inkjet printers. If you're going to do a lot of duty, like in an office, a laser might be a better choice because the cost per page is lower, but the upfront cost is higher and the toner cartridges isn't higher and stuff like that. So, there are a number of all-in-one printers I like. I've recommended and have used for a long time the Canon Pixma, P-I-X-M-A printers. They're very inexpensive, ranging from $80 to $200, depending on how many features you want. They're very good photo printers. So if she's doing any photo printing, and they're all in one. In fact, the $80 printer will do all of the things you just described, including faxing, which you didn't want. But what happens with those is that they tend to go through ink fairly quickly, and the ink cartridges are fairly expensive.
Yeah.
So that's just something to be aware of. If she's doing light-duty printing, it's fine. The workhorse that we use, and I really love, and we use this in the office, is the Epson Workforce Pro printers. These are more office-focused all-in-ones, although they're fairly inexpensive, and I think they do a great job. They're kind of SOHO, small office, home office. In fact, the Workforce 545 is $89, so it's kind of in the same price range. I've been very happy with those, and they are less expensive for ink, but my experience with the photo printing is not that they're as good for that. They also, I like the fact that they have big cartridges, so they don't go through cartridges as quickly, which is very, very handy.
Okay.
So, and for a complete replacement on the cartridges, I mean, you're talking maybe $20, which is a big improvement. So those that my work, and by the way, we should also mention Epson is a sponsor of the show in some cases, and but I'm a big fan. I've used Epson for years. Epson's what it's ironic because Epson's what professional photographers use. They have really good top of the line photo printers, but their workforce printers are really not. They're designed for office and small office, not so much. They do color, and they'll do brochures and things like that, but not as great for photo prints.
Okay. Cool.
Is she going to do photos at all?
Yeah, she will be. The only concern I was thinking with the inkjets is if she doesn't use it for a while, do the cartridges like dry up or anything?
Yeah, but all of them have a nozzle cleaning routine that usually works. So, I mean, for a while, what? 8 years? 8 months? 8 minutes? 8 weeks? I don't know. If you don't use it a lot. I mean, if you don't use it for 6 months, you'll probably want to do a nozzle cleaning. But if you use it once a week, you're fine.
And make sure she knows how to use the cleaning function.
Yeah, it's on the front. It'll be easy to use. Both of these printers work, by the way, with iOS very well, too. So if she has an iPhone or an iPad.
Yeah, she has an iPhone, either a 4 or a 4S.
Yeah, Epson has a iPrint app that you could for free that you could put on your computer, on your iPhone, and then it prints, which is very handy. That's why Wi-Fi printing nowadays is the thing.
Oh, yeah. I don't think she's plugged it into Ethernet.
Nobody has. We're all wireless these days. I'm very happy with the workforces. The other thing they have is big paper trays. You could put two reams of paper in the workforce, which means you don't go to the printer as often to change the ink or to change the paper. And I'm lazy, so I like that a lot. I find them very economical and really good quality. The only thing missing, in my opinion, is the photo prints. The Canon is better for that, but more expensive day-to-day. One way to get the photo prints done is to use an online service like Flickr, Picasa, Ofoto, Shutterfly, Snapfish. All of them are not only storage, but then you can print photos, and they do a very nice job. So I don't. It's funny. I thought photo printing would be a big issue for me. I don't. I rarely do it. I even have a big Epson, you know, it's very expensive, high quality photo printer that does 19 by 14 prints, and it's gathering dust. It's just, I don't use it enough probably to have made it worthwhile. Daryl, New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Daryl.
Hey, Leo. Huge fan since Tech TV. How are you?
Mom, I'm great. Thanks.
I've had a problem. I'll be streaming video while I'm, you know, watching, and it'll start to stop. So I've been using speedtest.net to check my speeds every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll check it, and the download will be about half a megabit per second, and the upload will be about the same. So
that's really slow for download.
Really slow. So yeah. I'll reset the modem and the wireless router and get it back up, and then I'll do another speed test, and it'll be up around 30 download and then around 10 upload. And I can do this every day, and I'll get the same result.
So the modem is the router is crapping out on you somehow. Is it old? First thing I'd do is I'd see if there's firmware update for it. Who makes it? Is it Linksys?
Well, I just replaced the modem through the ISP, which is one of the largest.
That's the problem. Yeah, the ISP modems are terrible. Is it? It's Verizon?
It's Comcast.
Comcast. Yeah. Yeah, I bought my own modem. They'll let you buy your own cable modem.
Right.
And hold on a sec. We'll talk a little more about this in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I gotta be me.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking to Daryl in New Jersey. He's on Comcast. You have a cable modem. And he says the speeds. Yep. Yeah, the speeds vary crazy. Now, there's a few different things you can do with Comcast, and this is true in most cases. First of all, make sure you're on a DOCSIS 3 switch, DOCSIS 3.
Yeah, I just had Comcast send me a new one. That's the new one I have because I noticed the old one wasn't DOCSIS 3 compliant.
Well, but also they have to put you on a DOCSIS 3 switch at the head end. So you want to make sure they're also sending you DOCSIS 3.
See.
So that's true. That was an upgrade. I ended up buying, I just felt like, you know, they charge, about $5 a month for rental of the cable modem. So
right.
I bought for $100 an Aeris Touchstone DOCSIS 3 cable modem, because I thought it was probably a little better than the banged up one that I was going to get from Comcast, and B, because I figured, well, in 2 years it pays for itself, and I figured I'd be using it for at least that long. I'm not saying it's necessarily better to buy, but
right.
so step one is to make sure that call Comcast, say, am I on DOCSIS 3 switch? We were not, for instance, in the old tech guy labs. We were on DOCSIS 2. And I fortunately got a nice Comcast rep who switched us over. She said, oh, yeah, we'll put you on DOCSIS 3. So that's the first thing.
Some of the techs probably don't know what to do.
Right. Have you ever broken 8 megabits per second?
Oh, yeah. When I reset, I go up to 30 megabits
okay,
per second.
Okay, so you are then on DOCSIS 3. 30 is their burst, by the way. You don't stay 30. Looks good on speed test. But what happens after about 20 seconds is it steps down to a slower sustained throughput. That's what Comcast calls its burst. A couple of things I would do. Yeah, a couple of yeah. You know what? 30 is great. That's more than the middle tier says it'll provide. So you're happy.
Okay.
What I would do is go to. It's still happening, so it could be many things. It could even be the bandwidth on the cable modem, right? It could be going up and down. But it sounds to me, since rebooting the modem fixes it, it's the modem. And I would call Comcast and say, hey, this is happening, and they should replace that.
I did do that, and they said that they reset it and fixed it, but maybe they didn't do something right with the DOCSIS 3.
Could be. The other thing to always check is your DNS performance. DNS,
okay.
You know, this is an interesting problem that people are having right now on Wi-Fi on iPhones, on the new iPhones. They're having all sorts of problems. And it turns out that the iPhone and older iPhones, too, seem to be very sensitive to slow DNS. So it's a good idea to test your DNS. There are a number of DNS programs that I actually really enjoy. My friend Steve Gibson makes one that will find the fastest DNS in your neighborhood. It's free. It's called the DNS Benchmark. You can get it from grc.com. And when you download it, what it does is it runs for a while, tests the performance of DNS servers near you and tells you which one's the fastest. It may not be Comcast's. And it's completely, and you just change this in the router. It's an easy thing to do. And certainly for the iPhone, it could be a big fix. You know, if a quick and simple thing is just to try use Google's, which is, I think, 8.8.8.8. It's usually good almost everywhere. And just see if that improves your performance.
Okay.
That won't hit through. That won't hit your throughput like on speed test. What it will do is means web pages load slowly because it takes a while to find them. And then finally, I would try this program that is we've recommended before. We're going to bring the site down because every time I mention it, I do. It's from icsi.berkeley.edu. Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley offers this. What they're doing is they're kind of testing the quality of the internet. The ICSI Netalyzer is what you want to try. It's a Java program. Just if you Google Netalyzer, N-E-T-A-L-Y-Z-R, you can find it very quickly. You'll run this Java program, and it will also pinpoint problems with your connection that are more than just the bandwidth, buffer bloat, things like that. So this Netalyzer could really tell you if there's a long-term problem. The fact that rebooting the router fixes it tells me that it is probably that cable modem that they gave you. But there's something weird going on. By the way, with Java, do not ever. It was a big Java flaw. Again, I talked about one last week. This week, again, another huge Java flaw discovered. There is a new version of Java available for most computers. Not Apple, because Apple has to write its own. They don't use the official Java. My strong suggestion is to check your browsers and if it disable Java in the browser. That fixes most of the problems. These Java flaws we've been seeing take advantage of the fact that in most browsers, Java runs automatically. Java is a internet programming language that's widely used and was supposed to be secure. But in fact, the bad guys have found numerous holes in it. There's a new one that was discovered Thursday. So if you go to the settings, I'm looking at Safari, for instance, on the Macintosh. If you go to the settings and click the security tab, I'm not talking JavaScript. That's something completely different. You do want to keep that enabled in most cases because most of the web uses that. But you can usually uncheck enable Java. Just uncheck that, and then Java won't run automatically. Both Chrome and Safari, I imagine all modern browsers soon will say before they run Java, hey, somebody wants to run Java, is that okay? And if you didn't explicitly go to a site like Netalyzer that uses Java, you should say no. Don't do that. I don't want to do that. Because it is a little bit sketch, shall we say. And you can see because I have Java disabled, I don't actually get a big start button when I go to Netalyzer. I have to go back and enable Java for me just to run this Netalyzer program. So enable it, run it, then disable it again because it's not safe. And, you know, this is the second significant exploit, security flaw that we've seen in Java in 2 weeks. That's too many. Valerie in Los Angeles, California. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did I get that right? You want to make Siri less family friendly?
My husband has the best sense of humor. He is ready to upgrade from an old feature phone to, I think I finally got him talked into an Android or the iPhone. Now, he wants to know if, A, is Siri on the i5? And if so, can the voice either be reprogrammed to not be a Siri voice? And can you make, like, is there key words that can be used to where Siri is less family-friendly.
I understand. He wants to swear every once in a while in his text messages.
Absolutely. Like, you dumb bleep, turn left.
That's a great... Okay, first of all, you can change the voice, but it comes with a penalty. There are different voices for international use, so you don't have a whole lot of choices. Basically, you have the British voice, which I think is a man, or the American voice, which is a woman. Apple doesn't provide Siri with other voices, which is too bad. I think Siri is promising, but has a way to go. I mean, it's still beta. During our break, I am going to swear at Siri. I don't want to do it on the air, and see if I can make it be less family friendly. So keep listening, Valerie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, doing my research during the break. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you can call me toll-free. You can also visit our website where all the answers to every question lurk. That's techguylabs.com. So we had a great call ending the last hour. She was asking if I could get Siri to take off the profanity filter. And you can, you know, if you change your name to a profanity, Siri will say it. I don't think the dictation will take profanity, but I'm not sure on that one. You can change the voice. That was the other question. She says, my husband doesn't like the female voice. Well, if you go into the international settings, you'll notice Siri supports a variety of languages. If you go to English British, it will change it to a male voice. Here, I could play it a little bit just so you can hear it. What is the meaning of life?
To think about questions like this.
Could you hear that? It's a little low. What is the meaning of life?
A movie.
It is a movie. That's right. So that's a British voice. Not a very good voice. You can hear it's kind of computery and even a little buzzy. It just doesn't sound clear, does it? Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
You would think someone would have opened it by now.
That's the male voice. If you speak other languages, you can get it to do Siri to work in other languages. The problem is if you're trying to use it in English, you pretty much have to stick with either the United Kingdom English. Oh, wait a minute. There is a Canadian English and an Australian English. I didn't see that. Let's see what the Australian sounds like. What is the meaning of life? Now she's thinking. She might be downloading. Yeah, I have a feeling they're downloading the...
To think about questions like this.
That's not bad. It's a female voice with an Australian accent. So that's how you can change the voice. There are four voices, apparently. There's a U.S. English, Canadian English, U.K. English, and Australian English. Now, you might get some odd results if you use Australian English. I don't know if I ask it to put another shrimp on the Barbie what it's going to do. Anyway, I don't know if it's worth spending a lot of energy on. Siri is, in my opinion, still very beta. It's a gimmick. I do use it. You know, a lot of people in the chat room were saying, oh, I never use Siri. I do use it. I use it for simple things like setting alarms, asking for directions. She does pretty well with that. Notice I'm personifying her, aren't I? It does very well with that. And I use it for dictation a lot. Now, the dictation is okay. Google's might be a little better than the Siri for dictation, but at least, you know, I'm able to, I cannot type on the iPhone keyboard. It's just too small for my sausage fingers. So dictation helps me quite a bit. I really, really like having that capability. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go on to Bob in Montana, our next caller. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob Weigel here.
Bob, good to see you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm a different kind of tech guy here. I fix up vintage analog synths, but I won't ask any questions about that.
Oh, that's cool, though. What kind? Like ARPs or Moogs or Moogs? Or?
We got the old R2-D2, ARP2600, and a whole bunch
of
stuff.
You know, the guy who founded Carbonite and still its CEO, David Friend, was the founder of ARP.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That was his first startup.
He was in business with Alan Perlman.
Yeah, very smart guy. Yeah, I'm sure he was the business guy. He's very good at business.
The name, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what can I do for you, though, non-ARP specific?
I have a video channel on YouTube for, you know, things, and I'm having trouble. I'm stonewalled with my video uploads. Something happened. I bought Uleed Media Studio Pro years ago, version 8. Running on XP, and for some reason, all my settings went away on the FFD show codecs that I downloaded. And it just, I load a project, and there's nothing there. It just vaporized.
The codecs are still there, but you just have to re-enter the settings, or is it all?
I reloaded the codecs. I reloaded the codec pack, and it didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
For some reason, I can't select them. It only gives me, like, the only one that works that doesn't run it in slow motion is the MJPEG selection. and it makes bigger files than the ones that I put in. A 350 meg file will inflate to 500 meg.
Yeah.
And then you try to change the settings, and when I finally got down to one, it blew up to 3.6 gigabytes and turned into complete...
So the best codec for making video small, and the one that even YouTube prefers, is, as you probably know, H.264, not MPEG-2.
H.264.
It's MPEG-4.
Right. That's what I was using, yeah. And I, for some reason, I can't select any of that anymore. It's just... only leaves me like five options in the in that page of the software. Well,
there are Windows. You might want to download a Windows codec pack. It sounds like the ULEED Studio codecs are corrupted.
I downloaded the FFD Show, which is the
The one you used. Okay,
popular one, and it was working great. I had it all trimmed in, and
I would try the K-Lites. Now you know these are
weird.
These are probably illegal. Because you have to license some of these. You have to pay for them. So anything you download for free is probably illegal. But my favorite codec pack is K-Lite, K-L-I-T-E. I would either uninstall, you know, go to scratch, not uninstall ULEED, but uninstall the codec pack and start over.
Yeah, I did that once.
You did that once. There's also called another codec pack called the Windows Essentials Media Codec Pack. I would try another one. Sounds like this one is broken. People do like FFD Show. In fact, David Bix in our chat room says that's better, much better than K-Lite. So I don't know exactly what's going on. David Bix, sounds like you use these. I'm asking our chat room. Do you have a suggestion for Rob? Is there something he could do? Besides uninstalling and reinstalling? James in our chat room says, if you install, for instance, Corel Video Studio Pro X5, which is a paid program, it'll install all the essential codecs. I don't know why the codecs have gotten damaged. What he's talking about is in order to compress and play back video and audio, for that matter, you generally have compressors and decompressors. Compressors make the files smaller. If you couldn't compress video, you really wouldn't be able to send it around. It's already huge anyway. As you heard, it got to 3 gigabytes after he ran it through the compressor. So you have to have a compressor, and you have to have a decompressor to play it. I'm surprised that ULEED Studio did not come with, or Pinnacle Studio, rather, did not come, oh no, he said he uses ULEED, right? Did not come with the appropriate codecs. I wonder if they're fighting with FFD Show. I'm just not sure. I actually prefer, Wahil's right, Wahil, who's a listener in Dubai, says, why not just use Premiere Elements? And I agree with that. Adobe Premiere Elements, which is under $100, I find it better than the Video Studio product and more effective, and it comes with all the appropriate codecs. Tell you what, let's put all these links to codec packs, like CCCP codec pack and the Windows Essentials Media Codec Pack and the K-Lite Media Pack. Let's put those all in the show notes at techguylabs.com, and you can just try them one after the other, Bob, and see if one of them will work for you. I'm not sure why it's not working. Naomi, Denver, Colorado, Leo LaPorte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. This is the Naomi, the Faraday cage lady, and all of your recommendations worked.
They did. So you had a house that apparently had metal in the walls. It was making Wi-Fi unusable. Well, hang on. We have to take a break, but I'd like to hear about that and answer your question when we come back. Leo LaPorte, the Tech Guy. Whoops. Let me talk about getting a new phone or a new tablet or a new PC. Let me talk about what to do with the old stuff. Gazelle it. You know about Gazelle. We've talked about Gazelle before. GAZELLE.com. It's the easy way to recycle your old stuff so you can afford to get the new stuff. And of course, Gazelle gets very busy during new iPhone season. New iPads coming up, too, we think, in October. Now would be a good time to get a bid. See, Gazelle's quotes are good for 30 days. So maybe you're thinking, I'm going to trade in that old iPad and get a new iPad. Let's see what it would be worth. Five. What? Oh, now this is with a 3G. The 64 gig 3G AT&T, $500. So that's now what. Here's how it works. They'll give you that money. Put it in a box. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. And by the way, they'll even take broken iPads. If it's physical, serious, does not power on, broken or cracked screen, they'll still give you $100 for it, $110. If it's a flawless, $500. Now, they will take BlackBerries, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung phones. They'll take iPhones, iPods, MacBooks, and they will send you cash. Their data experts will wipe the data even, which is nice. You don't have to worry about that. And if, as I said, the item's worth a buck or more, they'll pay for the shipping. You just throw it in a box. They give you a shipping label. And then you get a check, a PayPal credit, or an Amazon gift card. And I would recommend that if you use Amazon because you get an additional 5%. Your quote is good for 30 days. So it's always a good idea to get the quote the minute you think you might want to upgrade because you now have 30 days to decide. And I can tell you right now, none of these gadgets gain in value. I'm sorry to say. Visit Gazelle right now and find out how much your old stuff's worth so you can get the new stuff. Gazelle.com. GAZELLE.com. Great way to recycle. Keep it moving with Gazelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo. So Naomi, Faraday Cage Naomi in Denver, Colorado. So your problem was, well, I think you had Wi-Fi upstairs. You wanted to get downstairs, but the building just had a lot of metal in the walls, which is, of course, death to Wi-Fi. How'd you get it solved?
Well, I put it in the dining room right over the TV downstairs.
Perfect.
So it's only 5 feet.
Perfect.
About 8 feet technically, but 8 inches of concrete rebar and steel plating later, but that you're...
Often repositioning, you know, radio frequency is voodoo, so repositioning stuff, moving it around, that will often help. You know, who knows? The signal might be bouncing, you know, off the wall and down the... You know, you don't know.
Yeah, they recommended the Netgear 2500 RP, and it worked fantastic. The only thing is... have these little green eyes that blink at us when we heat in the dining room.
I know how that is. I'm gonna have a moratorium on LEDs. I have so many LEDs blinking at me, I can't sleep.
Even our toaster blinks at
Everything blinks now.
I know.
That's enough. So I'm gonna, you could either, I guess you could tape over them. You don't really need to see them. I don't know what to do. It's crazy. So I've decided in my bedroom, I'm just moving every electronic gear out. I'm not even going to have an alarm clock. Even that blinks. I don't want anything. No light. Of course, I'll oversleep every morning. But
hey, I called about, I'm trying to help a friend with their old computer. They need to get some information off of a old hard drive. And it's Windows XP. I can get it to boot up, but I can't get past the password.
Yeah, because she doesn't know what the password is, I guess.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the good news is XP was horribly insecure. That's good news in this case because you don't need the password. You'll be able to get around it. A couple of ways you can do that. Depending on who installed it, there's a hidden administrator password. That you just enter blank. You type admin or administrator, and you hit enter blank. Hit enter with no password, and often it'll get you right in.
Done that,
didn't work. Oh, you're an expert, Naomi.
Wow.
You're an expert.
I keep old stuff going. You can't believe I have a 1986 hard drive working for anyway.
That is magic.
Yeah.
That is magic.
Right.
So, there are other ways to crack XP passwords. XP, unlike the more modern versions of Windows, was pretty vulnerable. There are password cracking programs. Try booting to safe mode, then try the administrator trick. See if that works. You done that? She's been there. All right, now you got to go to the biggies. There are a couple of hacker tools like LoftCrack and
LoftCrack.
Yeah, LoftCrack and LCP. These are hardcore hacker tools. Fortunately, because the Windows XP did not store the passwords too securely, they work pretty well. Probably the best one is OphCrack, O-P-H, crack, O-P-H, crack.
Mm-hmm.
It's free, and it shouldn't take too long. It's open source as well, so you know it's safe. You can actually get it from SourceForge. So the website is O-P-H-C-R-A-C-K
.sf.net. .sf.net.
And it will crack the password. Might take a little while to run, but it's a pretty good tool.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're now officially a hacker, Naomi.
Oh, I've been a hacker. Oh, no, I wouldn't say that.
I think we know the truth about Naomi now. Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Oh, great to talk to you.
Take care. You never know. You never know. They seem nice and normal. She was so quiet. And they're secretly hacking next door. There are a number of other choices. In fact, I hope that you're capturing all of these, James. NTPW reset will just reset the password. NTPW reset. Conboot, K-O-N-B-O-O-T. So there's lots of ways to do this. Because XP, later versions of Windows stored the password much more securely. XP did not do a very good job. I think that they uppercased them, as I remember. It was not great. So there's a few choices. Now, PC Guy does point out something that's important. If you use XP's built-in encryption on the XP, you got to be careful about cracking the passwords because you could make the data inaccessible. I'm presuming she did. If she forgot her password, she probably did not use encryption on the drive. But if you built in encryption, you know, use the built-in encryption, don't do it. Luke Stratton says the proper name is NT password reset. OphCrack seems to be a good, commonly accepted solution. George in Santa Monica, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, George.
Oh, good morning, Leo. I love photography, and I was looking on the internet, and somehow I got a YouTube video. It's about 1 trillion frames per second.
Oh, wow. That's super, 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 super slow-mo.
Yeah. What it is, they showed a picture of a laser, light coming out of a laser, and they captured that. And the laser itself in the screen was about 5 inches long.
Wow. That light is
going 186,000 miles per second.
That is cool. I love super slow-mo. It's so fun.
They said if they shot a bullet out of a gun, they could capture that, but it would take a year for the bullet to capture the stream.
Yeah, I'm looking at a YouTube video of 1 million frames per second of a bullet, and it looks pretty slow. A trillion. Well,
is that the one going through the apple?
Yeah, no, that's a very famous one. I've seen that one.
So a billion times faster than that one going.
Unbelievable! I wonder how they do that.
It's a camera they got. If you have a chance when you're not working, go ahead and look at that. It's called 1 trillion. Which is 1 and 12 zeros. Frame photography. Now Chris is coming on soon. Could you ask him if he has worked anything with high-speed photography?
I will. That's a great question. Oh, yeah, they're doing this at MIT Media Lab. That's where they're doing it. No wonder. These guys are very cutting edge.
It's a 10-minute video on YouTube, but it's fascinating.
They say they can see light particles moving through space. Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. Chris is coming on next, so that's perfect timing, George.
Yeah, great. That's why I tried to get the call in early.
You did a good job. I appreciate it, and I will ask him about that. There were some consumer cameras. Casio, I think, sold an XLM that had pretty good high speed or slow-mo. You know, it's confusing because the higher the frame rate, the slower the playback, right? But I don't know if they still make those. Let me ask Chris when he comes on in just a minute. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt is our photo expert, joins us most weeks when he's not busy traveling the world, gallivanting about to talk about digital photography. Hi, Chris.
And I finally got my own theme song. Isn't that awesome?
Kodachrome. Hey, you know, I have to. You gave us a tip that I'm going to share with our audience. We recommend and use all the time Logitech webcams for Skype, but some of the Logitech webcams do not have drivers for the Macintosh, and this has been a little bit of a problem with you. You're using a Mac with a Logitech cam, and we've had trouble with it. You know, but you found some software.
Well, it was the 50-60 hertz issue. We have 50 hertz mains here in Germany, and the camera only does 30 frames per second, and that clashes. So you end up with weird flicker and stuff. And a friend of mine pointed me to a little program that's on the Mac App Store called Webcam Settings, and that fixes that. You run that in parallel to Skype or something, and you can switch 50-60 hertz, you can change the brightness, you can change the white balance, and it's exactly what I've been looking for years.
Yes.
I'm so happy now.
$7.99 on the App Store. Yep. On Macintosh.
That's worth every penny if you have these issues.
Yeah, you really made a big difference in the quality. The image we're getting from you now looks fantastic.
I'm happy with it.
Yeah, yep. I'm really happy too. So before we get to your topic, which is night photography, and you have some great images to share with us, what about our last caller in high-speed photography? Have you ever done any of that?
No, the high speed I've done is the shortest speed that you can get without any special equipment is the speed of a flash firing. So your camera will typically go down to a 4,000th of a second or maybe an 8,000th of a second, but that's where most cameras stop, at least the ones that are accessible for us normal human beings. And then there are, and then you can use a very short flash to kind of freeze motion of things that move, because the flashes can be very short, like a 10,000th of a second, even down to shorter. So that you can use in a dark room to freeze motion really well, but shorter than that I haven't done. No, but I've seen this trillion frames per second.
That's crazy thing. Isn't it?
That is absolutely crazy. I mean, you see this wave of light moving through a room, and that is
that's a special kind.
Oh, that is more than special. I'm not sure we'll see anything like that ever in a consumer-grade camera, but they're getting pretty good with these kind of things. So
Canon did sell, and I don't know if they're still selling, in their XLM line, a camera that was capable of slow-mo photography. Mm-hmm. It looks like they still sell at least one of them, the high-speed...
And high-speed video, at least at more than 30 frames per second, 60 frames or even 120 frames per second. You see that now in some of the smaller things. Sony is just bringing out a competitor to the, what's it called? The camera that all the sports people have, the little tiny wide-angle thing that you put on your helmet.
Oh, the GoPro. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of those. Yeah.
And Sony's just bringing one out that does 120 frames per second. So
that's cool.
You can do really nice slow-mo.
That's
with
not
that.
Super slow-mo. Yeah.
It's not super slow-mo, but it's pretty slow-mo. Right. I mean, for sports things, that's definitely a great effect.
So, and I think these Canons go even slower. I can't remember what the frame rate is. I'll do some research. But let's get to our topic of the day, which is not slow-mo, but late night. And this is actually kind of the opposite. You want to have a wide-open shutter, right?
Well, what I did on the weekend is I spent time holding a workshop in the far west of Germany. And this is an old industrial park. It used to be a big blast furnace kind of thing.
That's
where they
so beautiful.
Where they, smelted
look at
metal. And what they did is they when that shut down in the 80s, they converted that to what they call a landscape park. So now you can actually go there. It's a recreational area. You can go there, you can climb up the blast furnaces, and at night they illuminate that with colorful lights. So you get this, it looks like a candy factory kind mm-hmm. of, but it's huge. I mean, this is huge. Lots of steel, lots of brickwork, really awesome for photography. And there are just a few things. If you want to try something like that, you might not have this kind of colorful illumination, but any kind of night photography, even if you point it at a regular city, you will have very colorful lights because they will use different technology. Some of those lights, when long exposed, will turn green. Some of them will turn orange. So you'll have really interesting colors in just regular cities. So I just thought I'd share a couple of tips of what
to do.
Yeah,
how do you get a picture like this? Yeah.
Well, first of all, obviously, you are looking at longer exposure time. So you will face the need for a tripod. Tripod is essential. You don't even try to do any of the automatic settings on your camera. You want to go manual. You want to go for a relatively low ISO, ISO 100, 200 maybe. You're looking at an aperture of something in the medium range. Again, we're talking f5, 6, something in this range. And then the shutter speeds, you have to go try and error. You have to try, and these pictures were taken anywhere between 10 and 20 seconds exposure. So you got to bring some time and take lots of these. So
the nice thing about digital photography is you can see the result in the back of the camera, so you know if you made it too long or too short.
Now be careful, because you will misjudge the brightness on the display of your camera, because you are in a dark environment, so everything will look much brighter than it is. So it really helps if you try this out at home, maybe in a dark room with just a few lights on, and just develop a feeling for it.
If you're lucky enough to have a histogram feature in your camera display, that would help, wouldn't it?
If you know how to read a histogram, but you will still on these pictures end up with a histogram bunched very much to the left side, because most of the picture is in the dark. So, but you will, if you watch the what we call the blinkies on the camera that show you where it's overexposed. Some cameras do that, like in a review picture, they will blink the overexposed areas. You can kind of gauge where you are with the exposure. But again, it's digital; you can try as much as you want. The biggest issue that a lot of people faced on the workshop is focusing, because
how do you focus? Yeah.
With faintly lit things, your camera might just not focus because it needs the light to focus. So here's the trick. If you have a DSLR that does video, use the live view feature. Live view is a lifesaver in this context. Autofocus might not work, but you can set your camera to manual focus. Switch on the live view, and the live view will usually let you zoom in digitally. So you can zoom into a part of the picture, manually focus on that, and that will even work with the stars in the sky. Those are even bright enough to register on there, and then you have a very good focus, and then you get pictures that are really, really crisp and look really nice.
There's something very satisfying about doing these timed exposures, these long 20, 30-second exposures. You just get beautiful results. If you're outside in the night sky and the stars are moving, you do even longer, and you'll see star movement.
And these things make these pictures, these long exposures make things visible that you do not see with your naked eye.
So it's kind of magic.
So it is magic. It turns things into something very, very different. The illumination you see in these pictures is colorful, but it wasn't as bright. So bringing this out, all of a sudden you see, oh, wait a minute, there was an orange patch over there that I didn't even really notice because it was so faint, and all of a sudden it jumps at you.
We have our photo assignment still, and encourage you to participate. It's not a competition. It's just for fun. And you can participate by taking an image, illustrating. What is the subject again?
Oh, you're calling me.
No, that's right. I'll look it up. I can go. All you have to do is go to...
I'm on there. I'm on my way.
It was FACE.
FACE, right.
So we're looking for you to make a new photograph illustrating the concept or the idea of FACE.
And I do see a lot of awesome pictures already. Really cool results so far.
The way to do it is to take that picture, tag it with the word FACE, upload it to Flickr, and then send it to the Tech Guy group. Now, what we're going to do is give you a couple more weeks, and then Chris will pick three. You're going to have a hard time, and do a little review on the air with him. ChrisMarquardt.com for more information. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
One final time for the start of a sentimental journey into history.
Yep. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. I saw an interesting proof of concept. Who did that? I think it was the Navy. Naval Intelligence did it. They showed how you could put a program on a phone. I think in this case they were using an Android phone, although there's no reason why it wouldn't work on any other kind of phone, that would take pictures on its own. When it was a fake camera app. And the idea was it would collect all these pictures, silencing the shutter so that you wouldn't hear it take the pictures. It's a spy program. And then once it had taken enough images, it would send it back to the server, where it would be assembled into a 3D image of, let's say, your house. And it was a very interesting technique, because, you know, they throw out the blank pictures and so forth. And then they gave these 3D images. It's an article in the MIT Technology Review, if you want to read it, I'll put it in the show notes. They take these 3D images and they gave it to people and said, well, what can you get? What kind of information could you steal? And things from, because the images were so high quality and there were so many of them, things like, for instance, checking account numbers, credit card numbers, if you leave your card out, QR codes, all sorts of stuff. They call it Place Raider. Now, this is a proof of concept, not something you can actually buy or use. But, I have to think, since it was developed by the Naval Surface Warfare Center, that the Navy probably has access to this. An Android app that secretly records your environment and builds a 3D model out of it. Okay. These, you know, something to remember, these smartphones that we carry along with us are really just ideal spy devices. There's a microphone, there's a camera, there's a GPS, there's an accelerometer, there's a compass. You know, you can if you can access that data in there, you can find out anything about anybody. It's kind of scary. James in Virginia, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, James.
Yeah, hey, Leo, thanks for everything. Been following since the Tech TV days.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for all you do.
I have a Dell XPS PC running Media Center 2005, and I made a practice of reimaging my PC every 2 years or so because of all the garbage that XP...
That's a good idea, I think.
Yeah, and I always go to day zero because my needs change all the time. About a year and a half ago, my son gets an Xbox, so I thought, oh, great, I can use my PC to record TV shows. Well, I re-imaged my PC over the Labor Day weekend and realized, oops, I didn't make a backup of my Center software, and now I can't find it anyplace. Microsoft doesn't seem to have it. Google always seems to point me at garbage sites, and I'm hoping you might be able to help me find this. I don't know if it's called Resource Manager or what they call it.
Is it Windows Media Center that you need, or what is it that you're missing?
I have Media Center on my PC, but I need the software so that I can stream to my son's Xbox when I use it as an extender.
I think it's called Media Extender, yeah. Let's see if they offer it for download. That's an interesting question.
You used to be able to go to xbox.com/PC setup, and you can see Windows and Vista, and then it says support for XP. Well, they used to be able to just click on the link and just go and get the software, but now I get messages saying, well, we're ending support in April.
Yeah, Microsoft really, this happens with Microsoft a lot. I guess it happens with every computer company. Apple's done it too. Pushes, you know, these new technologies and then just abandons them. And unfortunately, those of us who say, yeah, great idea, we'd love to do that, and then we're kind of messed up. So
And I'm not upgrading right now simply because of Windows 8, but also the price of a new machine. I can't afford it right now. Right. So I'm trying to limp along with what I've got. And this machine has been chugging along great for 7 years. I clean it out regularly, back it up regularly. I do all the stuff I need to do. It's just this one piece of software I didn't back up.
Does anybody have a suggestion for places you could find? Because I don't know. I'm looking and I see that it doesn't say that anywhere. There are other things like Plex that you could use as Media Extender software. Wait a minute. Now, Luke Stratton has given us a link to a Microsoft hotfix, and he says that if you install this update, the update roll-up for Windows XP Media Center Edition 2005, wow, good find, Luke, that it will include in the roll-up, if it lets you install this, it will include the Media Extender for the 360. Is that right? It says Media Extender.
Pack 3 doesn't do that, apparently.
Yeah. Well, let me give you, it says to receive, make sure you're running Service Pack 3. No, because this is an update specifically for the Media Center, right? So this is, I don't know if this will work. Let me give you the URL and you can try it. It's support.microsoft.com and it's TechNote 900-325, 900-325, and see if that works for you. That's an interesting idea. There are there not chat room media extender solutions, third party media extender solutions that will work with the Xbox? Well, Plex, I'm not sure. Plex is based on the Xbox Media Center, ironically. I don't know if it works on an Xbox 360. It's a really great solution. Or maybe Orb. Does Orb work? There. This is a... yeah, maybe it looks like you might be able to use Plex. Yeah, so I would look at the Plex Media Center. Now, you'll be replacing Windows Media Center with the Plex software on your Windows machine, and then you'll put the Plex server or extender on your Xbox 360. Plex is actually really great, so I would take a look at that.
I've heard of Plex on one of your other shows.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. It's based on Xbox Media Center. So if you look for Plex on Xbox, you'll find there's some good solutions, it looks like, for that. But anyway, try this update. Maybe they continue to offer the update, even though it's from 2005, 7 years old. But they continue to offer it for download, and it apparently contains the extender in there. See if that works. And then next time, back that up, too. Your strategy, James, I like. And I'll explain what he's talking about with these image backups. But you're experiencing one of the pitfalls of it, so I'll talk about a way around that as well. Let's see here. Bill is in Puerto Rico, our next caller. Hey, Bill, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo. Over the years, I've had some hearing loss. I currently use a Bluetooth device, a Plantronics 903. But that's just not giving me the amplification I need. Can you recommend a Bluetooth device that would provide more amplification?
That's a great question. I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe somebody in the chat room does. There are absolutely, I'm sure, Bluetooth headsets that are designed for people who have hearing difficulties, hearing impairments. So I'm going to look here. I'll tell you what, keep listening.
I have another question.
Okay, well, hang on. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour, and I'll come back to you. And by then, I will have some good recommendations. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Now it's time to talk tech. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, all of that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. You want to talk high tech. We'll be talking to Bill in Puerto Rico. He's getting a little hard of hearing. He says, I want a louder Bluetooth headset than the Plantronics 903 I use. Boy, do I have an answer for you. Apparently, there's a whole site for people who have hard time hearing. It's called Soundbites with a Y. SoundBytes. Your source for independent hearing products, and they have a whole page on Bluetooth devices and accessories for the hearing impaired. Headsets, over-the-ear earphones, all kinds. So this would be a great place to start. They certainly have a lot of brands. And then a number of people have reminded me in the chat room that truckers, and I actually bought this boom headset from, is it Blue Parrot? I've forgotten the name. But truckers use this because it's very noisy in the cab. But I think that it's more, the Parrot headset's more designed for noisy environments so that you can be heard, not so much that they can hear you. It might be a little bit louder. I bought one. I didn't notice it a lot louder. But it is a great Bluetooth headset. The one I bought was the B250 XT from Blue Parrot. I would go to the Soundbites site, Bill. That looks like a good place to start.
I'll do that, Leo. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Sure. In Picasso, it has face recognition, and you can put in people's face.
Yeah, I use it all the time. It's a great feature.
Where is that data stored so I can back that up in case I lose a hard drive?
Well, I would recommend using the Picasa Web feature of Picasa, which uploads to Picasa Web and stores it as a backup. It's kind of built in. It's an easy thing to flip the switch on and just say, hey, store everything on the web. It's not public unless you say so. And it's using Google, so it's reliable.
What if you don't want to put your pictures out on the web?
Well, they're not public unless you say so.
No, I understand that. But somewhere in the computer, that file has to be stored.
Yeah. Yes. If you're yes, that's right. If you're using any software like Picasa and creating photo albums, downloading from your camera, it is storing them. But if you back them up, you're backing them up to the internet. Do you want to back them up to a local drive?
Right.
Okay. So what you're saying is, where are the Picasa photos stored?
Well, yes. Where is that information stored?
Are you on Windows?
Yeah, Windows 7. My pictures are in My Pictures.
Okay. That's where they're stored then. I'm must be missing something. That's where they're stored.
That's where the pictures are stored, but the information.
Ah, like, you're saying what? You know the captions and the
yes.
Retouching that you do. Where is that stored? The photo face recognition stuff. Where is that stored?
Yes.
Yeah, I am not sure, Picasa. But I think we could probably figure it out. I would guess that it's stored in a Picasa album somewhere or a folder somewhere.
I searched Picasa help and I couldn't find it.
Yeah, they may not. Okay, here we go. How to back up Picasa's database. That's what you want to know, isn't it?
Yes.
So the database in Windows 7, and it'll be different on Macs, is stored in your user, in your user profile. You know, it's users/ bill or whatever it is, / app data. That's a Microsoft folder. appdata/local/google. And inside there, you'll see folders named Picasa and Picasa albums. You back those up. They will be big. And you should have those two databases.
Thank you very much for your help,
Bill. You're welcome, Bill. Nice to talk to you. I do think it's a good idea. They may be hidden, by the way, so you'll want to uncheck the hide folders setting. I would suggest, that you do consider an online backup solution. I understand you're worried about privacy and stuff, but seriously, they're private. Picasa face recognition data, according to iPhone 19132 in our chat room, is stored in EXIF type info as serialized profiles linked to contacts. How interesting. That might mean that it's not something that you can back up by backing up those two app data files. Is it stored in the contact? How interesting. Scotland Calling also says there's an easy way to find that app data folder. If you just do click Start Run or hit Windows key plus R to open a run box and paste or type in percent app data percent, all caps. That will open the app data folder and everything should be in there. Not sure what file it's written to. That's the question. We'll keep working on that. I bet you, Bill, somebody knows. Jane in San Diego, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jane.
I love listening to you, Leo, and you're going to laugh because I'm a person who's not a computer person. I hate computers.
Well, you know, sometimes I hate computers too, actually. I want to throw them.
I know, but I don't. I have too much stress in my life, and I don't have young kids around or, people who can, except for friends who come in occasionally, to show me something. So I'm very worried about security, and my question today has to do with, and take into account that I don't know really anything other than things I pick up on your show and everything, is Silverlight. The other day I had a friend over and she was using Firefox because I have the Snow Leopard that I bought in 2007, and somebody had helped me download Silverlight so that I could hear a radio program that I couldn't get here locally.
Right.
And when I'm on safari, it's never said anything to me about Silverlight being a problem. And then she went on Firefox, and all of a sudden this big ad popped up, warning, you know, or whatever, red thing, and said Silverlight, you know, and it gave me the numbers, you know, were a big problem, or I forget how it said.
I'm a little worried, not about Silverlight, I'm worried about that pop-up. So Silverlight is okay. Silverlight is like Flash. It is a video or audio playback mechanism made by Microsoft. So it's safe because Microsoft makes it. And it's used by, if you use Netflix, for instance, on your Macintosh, you'll have to install the latest Silverlight. And I guess this radio station used it for audio playback. So it is fine. What I'm concerned about is, what is this pop-up that you saw? Do you know where it came from? Are you there, Jane? Oh, you know what? I can't hear you, Jane, right now. We're having a little bit of a technical difficulty. Kyle, I lost the lock again. You know that thing that goes out every once in a while? So Jane might be talking, but I can't hear a thing. So I'm not sure what we're going to do about that right now. This has happened once before. It's a technical thing that I don't really understand, but I know that you can hear me. I just can't hear you. So let me continue on, and we'll try to figure out what's going on. The key on Silverlight is it's fine to use. It's safe if you get it from Microsoft, not from some third party, you know, hacker version of Silverlight.com. That wouldn't be good. But as long as you get it as a Microsoft program from Microsoft.com, it's fine. I'm worried about this pop-up. But maybe you have Little Snitch running. That's a great little security program for the Macintosh that watches for outbound connections to the internet. If it were running and it saw Silverlight saying hello, it would say, hey, wait a minute, Silverlight's trying to contact the outside world. You could say, yeah, that's fine. It's not a problem. So I think that you're okay. I really do, especially since you're on a Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I love my chat room. If you've not been in there, you can go to the website techguylabs.com and join the fun, usually around 1,000 people. And there's some real experts in there. And Jane is back on the line. I apologize for losing you, Jane. We had a little technical snafu, but everything's working again. And let me ask you a critical question. When you got that pop-up warning, were you using Firefox?
Yes.
Ah, we have the answer. Thanks to Kay Wierso in the chat room. See, it turns out Firefox...
Yeah, after you answer that, though, you said something when I went off, you know, with you, and it really made me wonder. So go ahead, answer that.
All right. But this is the good news. Firefox does this if you have an old version of Silverlight. It says, old versions of the Silverlight plugin are causing stability problems in Firefox. So they block it. Now, I don't think that's appropriate, but that... That's what they do. We will put a link in the show notes that takes you to the official Silverlight page. The best way to fix this, it would be a good idea anyway, is to get an update in Silverlight. Silverlight 5 is the current version, and you can get it from Microsoft.com/get Silverlight. And you'll get version 5.1.104.11.0 as of this moment. And then you'll not get the warning anymore. So Firefox is saying, hey... when you use Silverlight, older versions of Silverlight with me, I crash. So you don't have to worry about that. Just get the latest version. Now, what did I do to scare you?
Well, the thing is, I put that on like the first day I was here with somebody's help. And
right.
I don't even know whether we went to Microsoft to get it. I was on the radio program, well, you know, trying to tune into the radio program, and it said, you know, we use Silverlight or something, and so I clicked on something with somebody
else. If the radio program gave you a link, if that website had a page that said, get Silverlight here, I'm sure it was fine.
But it must be the old version, because then there was another site that we went to which showed a list of like 200 or 250 things to be aware of, and that version, because I knew I had a very old version, I just thought when I was on Apple, this is how stupid I am, I thought Apple would always update those things.
Ah, that's a good point, isn't it? But it's not an Apple product. So while Apple does do updates...
Yes.
And now if you buy stuff in the App Store, it's great because everything that you buy in Apple's App Store is, you know, it says, hey, I've got updates and you can update it, just like you do on your phone. But it cannot and does not do updates for third-party programs.
Right. So it wouldn't have done the update anyway if I was an Apple, right?
Right. Silverlight should, if you launch Netflix and it runs and you've got an old Silverlight plugin, you should get a warning saying, hey, this is old. Would you like to update? But maybe not. Maybe that's something, you know, I've seen that update before, but maybe it's not doing it in whatever you're using. So,
and that was the thing. It probably was something that was okay then to click on, but I didn't want to do that because I do hear.
You're smart.
You're smart. That's come across. I'm telling you, Leo, there's so many things as a novice that I would have done thinking, you know, because I'm from the old school, black is black, white is white.
And you know what? You're trusting.
Yes, that's it. And so many things you said on your program would have been something I would have said, well, they can't do that. Of course I can click that. So I am so, you have helped me so much in those ways, but I'm still such a novice. And wait, could I ask you this?
I got to say, Jane, you're pretty good. You knew you had Firefox and Silverlight. You knew you were running Snow Leopard. All of those things are somebody, a real novice, would not know. So you're doing just fine.
Because I spend so much time on the computer trying to figure out about the Silverlight, and I did get on some anyway. But if I had ESET, because I am thinking of getting that, it's just that I use it so infrequently that I have to pay, you know, for the thing.
Just between us kids, you're not the kind of person. You don't have teenagers using your computer. You're not the kind.
I seem to go to these sites because
Go to the bad sites.
Well, I normally don't, but every once in a while, like Bachelor was on, and I wanted to find out something about that. I mean, here I am in my 60s, right, and the Bachelor thing. And I went to, obviously, when I went on YouTube or something, then this other warning popped up, and I said, I only use this computer like once, 2 months, and I got this.
Well, they're out there, unfortunately. Now, the good news is because you're on a Mac, you're pretty good. I mean, I would run my updates regularly, you know, make sure you patch everything.
Go on the computer.
Yeah, you're pretty good. ESET would just be a backstop. So would this program, Little Snitch, that I mentioned, just a kind of an extra thing. If you feel at all nervous, go ahead and get it. But you're probably all right. If your inbuilt caution is a very good sign. I don't want to turn you into a cynic. You know, I don't want people to go, oh, the internet's this terrible place full of evil stuff and don't go there. I don't want you to turn you into that. I just want you to have a normal amount of slight suspicion over stuff and just kind of use your noggin. And it sounds like you got a good head on your shoulders. I wouldn't worry.
Have it if I didn't hear you. Don't ever not say things.
Oh, no, don't worry. This is my job.
I wouldn't have even been on the computer at all because I'm the type that I'd rather know everything
right. That
I can and then make my own decisions. But if I come in not knowing anything and trusting of all this stuff, because as I said, I thought Apple updated the third version of, you know.
You would think so, and this is a problem both on Windows and Macintosh because while Microsoft would love to update Adobe Flash because it's just buggy, 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 they can't. They have to wait till Adobe does it. Apple would love to, update third-party apps, they can't.
I really wish that they could because Adobe Flash comes up on my thing too.
By the way, this is why I often tell people who are worried about this stuff, use an iPad. Because that's an environment where Apple can and does enforce that. Apple makes sure that the updates are automatic. You know, you get a warning, time to update, and Apple does update everything. And so there is an environment that is much safer for people. And in fact, if you're worried at all, you might consider it.
Do you know, Leo, when I went to buy my computer, they were just coming out with the iPad, and I was trying to find out, should I wait? You know, but I didn't think I could wait a few months because of something else. And that's probably what I need, right? Because it's more secure. Is that
Yes, it's much more secure if you use a computer only occasionally for surfing and email, and it's probably better to have an iPad. You really don't have to worry. For instance, there is no Silverlight or Flash available on the iPad. You do it Apple's way or you don't do it at all.
However, would I still be able to listen to programs?
Well, that radio station, no.
Oh.
Which is why that radio station is dumb, because what they're leaving out, an entire world of mobile users that cannot listen because there's no Silverlight on smartphones or tablets.
Oh.
So that's a mistake that they're making, which at some point, I hope somebody comes along and tells them, hey, you know, you really should use a system that's compatible with all the mobile devices, because everybody's moving mobile. Everything's going mobile.
And wouldn't iTunes, though, I don't know if I'd had to purchase it if I listened, because I went on the website, you know, as much as I could last night, which is not much, and somewhere it said iTunes, but that would seem to be more for to see a show.
No, but iTunes does have radio on it.
Right. So, and if iTunes has radio, are they normally free? Because I'm certainly not.
Yeah, radio's free.
Radio's usually free.
That's why I love radio. It's ad-supported free media.
Well, you have helped me, and there's no, you don't think I should,
I think you're okay, Jane. I do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Interesting question from the chat room. I'm running iOS 5.1.1, says Web6806. Should I upgrade my iPhone 4S to iOS 6? Well, there's a big question. For instance, you'll lose your maps. You'll lose the Google Maps, which are still good if you haven't upgraded. Then they'll be good for a while. Maybe forever. I don't know. Google has indicated that they don't plan to pull the plug on it. So you'll lose that. But you will gain an improved Siri, much improved Siri. You'll gain some interesting features. I'm not sure I'd rush to upgrade to iOS 6, actually. If you're happy with your iPhone as it is, you probably should stick with 5. Not upgrade yet. Some folks with iPhone 4s are saying battery life goes down, not up. I don't know about that. Probably a good idea to wait till 6.1 anyway. Make sure they've got all the bug fixes. I, of course, knowing me, I upgraded everything immediately. That's just the way I am. Henry in Garden Grove, California, our next caller. Hi, Henry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've lost Locke again. I'm so sorry. Can you hold on for a second, Henry? I unfortunately can't hear you. Now I can hear you. Go ahead. That was very strange. Go ahead, Henry. Are you there? Maybe I lost him.
He's not saying anything.
He's silent. All right. Well, I guess I didn't miss anything. Let me go to John in Downey, California. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, good afternoon, Leo. I really appreciate your show, and thanks for sharing all the knowledge with us.
My pleasure, John. What can I do for you?
Well, it's Christmas. That's my favorite part of the time of the year coming up. It's Christmas time, and heavens forbid, but I have 3 grandkids, and I'm thinking about buying them an iPad.
Wow, you are a nice grandpa.
Well, yeah, and one of my grandsons is autistic, so I believe it'll help him a heck of a lot in his interpersonal skills.
I believe that's the case. I've seen some amazing results with autistic kids and iPads. Absolutely.
Yeah, I did too. I saw a segment on 60 Minutes show, and they just showed some fantastic things. Anyway, my question is, I'm looking at the Apple Store, and I have all kinds of selections, the iPad 2, the new iPad.
Well, how old are the kids to begin with?
My granddaughter is 10. 7 and 2.5. The autistic child is 7.
Okay.
I got this 2.5.
And are you going to get one device for all 3 of them, or are you going to
No, I'm going to get each one of them.
Oh, you are a generous grandpa.
Well, you know, stock market's been pretty good.
Well, I would say for the younger one, and perhaps the younger two, the iPad 2 is $100 less and is probably just fine.
Okay.
The iPad 3 for the older kid is going to have, it's much better quality screen, much higher resolution. And as the 10-year-old gets into, 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, they're going to start wanting to use textbooks, things like that. They'll see a real benefit from the iPad 3.
Now, would you get, I don't want them to have internet access. This is just for Wi-Fi, right?
Don't get the 3G ones, because you'll have to pay a monthly fee for each of them for 3G access. So, yeah, get Wi-Fi. If they've got Wi-Fi at home, that'll be fine. Now, they will have internet access, but there's good parental controls on the iPads now.
Okay. Then the other question I have is the accessories. There's, covers and cases and adapters and cables. Should I just let their dads figure that out?
Yeah. It comes with everything they need except headphones. You might want to throw in some headphones, especially for the 10-year-old, because she's going to want to listen to music, things like that.
Any recommendation on that?
The kids, kids today, they love, what are they called? The skull crushers, the skull monsters. I can't remember the name. But the kids, they love those. The thing I would recommend for the younger two, Skull Candy. Thank you very much. Skull Candy. They're colorful. They're pretty. They're decent headphones. If you really want to be proactive, you might want to get Edemotics, which is a great, very high-quality headphone company. It makes a special version of their headphones for kids that is designed to protect their hearing. Because, you know, kids tend to listen too loud. And they can damage their hearing. And at that age, that's the last thing you want. So Edemotic has something called Eddie Kids that's designed. In fact, this probably would be a good thing for all three. It's designed for, they say kids 4+, so not for the 2.5-year-old. But any kids are going to use headphones. And mom and dad, when they start watching Annoying Orange, are going to say, get the headphones out. They really are good because they have limits on the sound pressure, and that's exactly what you want. They're designed for kids, so that would be a very thoughtful accessory. The other thing I would throw in for the 7 and the 2.5-year-old is a good case, like a pretty. They make serious case for young kids. They're heavy rubber cases, and they're probably a great idea for an autistic kid and for a 2.5-year-old because these are a little fragile and. Younger kids especially have a tendency to throw things. So
yeah.
I would get a good case. Let me see. We had one on here that we loved. I don't remember the name of it, though. Let me see. It was really good for younger kids.
See, the headset was the Etymotic Kids.
Yep, Edemotics. If you just Google Edemotics, Etymotic, they have Eddie Kids. You'll find that, and those are really great.
Okay.
And there are a number of companies I'm looking here that sell really serious, thick rubber cases, which for younger kids is a great idea. It makes it easier for them to hold, and if they drop it, it's not going to break the iPad unless it hits it just right.
Okay, I'm watching on the web. I'm looking for that website.
All right. I'll put, if you're watching on the web, I'll put the website up. The G-Love case, I think, is the one we tried, G.Love. It's a very thick rubber case, and it actually makes it more friendly for kids. They have special kids' cases as well, and since you're watching on the web, I will show you the Edemotics site, Eddie Kids. Really, this is a neat idea. We saw these at CES, and I just thought it was such a great idea to pay attention to kids' hearing. Apple does build in a setting that keeps the level from going to maximum volume, which I would recommend. But these headphones, they cannot go past a safe level. And kids have good hearing. They're not like us. They don't need to have it super loud. So there you go. Eddie Kids. What a nice grandpa. 3 iPads. One more thing I would say. We do think, the rumors are strong, that Apple will be doing another iPad in about two or three weeks. Sometime in October, roughly the middle of October, we expect Apple to announce a 7.85-inch iPad. Now, that might actually be better for the smaller kids. It will be internally the equivalent, we believe. These are all, you know, this is all speculation, but I think it's accurate. It'll be the equivalent of an iPad 2. So it'll be 1024 by 768, the lower res screen, which at 7.8 inches is still good. And it'll have the slower processor and so forth. Not a problem for the 7 and 2.5-year-old, I think. But that might be worth waiting. You got time. Christmas is another two. Grandpa wants to buy Christmas presents. Another 2.5 months off, 3 months off. So I would wait and see. Apple will certainly get those into the product line if they can before Christmas. And those look to be pretty cool. Matthew in San Diego, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Matthew. Hello, Matthew.
Nothing.
You know, is this it's the same line. Is it the same guy? I'm not getting anything. I wonder if this is the line we're having trouble with. Let me go to line two. Chuck, in Colorado. Hi, Chuck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo, finally got a hold of you.
Finally got on.
All right, Leo, I'm a beginner on computers. I don't know anything about them, so I was wondering if you could help me.
All right, I can, but I hear the magic sound, which tells me I got to take a break. When we come back, you're next on the runway, Chuck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
The same time every year.
not 32, is your live read.
By now the kids all know it's the grandpa in the Santa suit show.
Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Don't listen to this, children. Do not listen. This is a bad man. He's wrong. That's not Grandpa in that Santa suit. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. We were talking in the break about whether Grandpa John should give iPads or maybe these Nexus 7s, which are great, by the way. The Nexus 7 is a lot cheaper than an iPad. 7-inch Android-based tablet for $200 to $250 bucks, and I love them. But I don't think giving a kid a Nexus 7 is going to go over well. And I was saying that'd be like giving them, you know, Uncle John's brick set instead of Legos. You know, it's just not, it's not quite, it's not, yeah, it's, you know, for a geek, a Nexus 7 is a great thing. The kids want iPads. I think that's really almost cruel to give. Wasn't it a South Park episode where he didn't get an iPad? His mom gave him, what was it, a Toshiba tablet instead? It was... On the other hand, giving them Legos is not a bad idea. That's a great idea. Give them some Legos, too. Anyway, we were talking to, before the break, Chuck in Colorado. I had to interrupt. Sorry, Chuck. Welcome back. Go right ahead. What's your question?
Well, I'm a beginner on computers. I know nothing about them.
That's fine. We're all a beginner sometime.
Well, I'm 70-some years old, so help me.
You're going to love it.
Good.
You're going to love it. My mom's 80, and I can't get her off the iPad. She has an iMac, a MacBook, two iPads, an iPod. I can't get her off them.
Fran, what'd you recommend?
Well, what do you want to do first, Chuck?
Well, I just want to get on it and find, you know.
I think you'd love an iPad. Is your site pretty good?
Oh, yeah.
I think you'd love an iPad, and I think going with an iPad will save you a lot of heartache. Because you can get, you know, computer, you get all sorts of problems and malware and viruses. It'd be so much easier, if you want to do email surfing, play some games, chat with people, stuff like that. The iPad is a great choice. That's absolutely what I would recommend. You might wait till the 7.5-inch comes out or 7.8-inch comes out. Supposed to in the near future, but frankly, I wouldn't. I think the get yourself, if you have Wi-Fi in your house, you probably don't get the Wi-Fi iPad. If you don't have Wi-Fi, you need internet access for anything, a computer or an iPad, to be any use. So get the 3G capable iPad. Get one that works well in your neck of the woods, whether it's AT&T or Verizon. You're going to be paying another $20 a month. Just keep this in mind for internet access, but that's actually cheap compared to what you'd pay for terrestrial internet access. And I think it's going to give you a whole lot of things you can do. I do not hesitate. For a first-time computer, get an iPad. Just save yourself all the heartache. You hear these callers all the time. Oh, I wish I'd got an iPad. Oh, my Windows is broken. My OS 10. What's this warning? What's this pop-up? You mean they didn't update the software? Get an iPad. All right. Now let's go to Henry in Garden Grove, California. What's the name of this $100 Wi-Fi, Henry?
Leo, that's the problem. I don't know. I've seen Rick Ramirez advertise it on Friday night on Channel 11, or Channel 7, I mean, at 11 o'clock news. Mm. You know, Rick does this thing on the special gadgets.
I would guess there is a new Wi-Fi solution out there. In fact, it's called Freedom Pop. Does that ring a bell for you?
I don't know. I didn't. You know, I kind of caught the tail end, but you plug it into the computer. You pay about $99. It's like a stick. You plug it in the USB.
Oh, and that's for wireless internet access or for phone?
Wireless internet access, yes. And then there was also another thing he showed where you slide the back of a phone out, the back of another phone on. This deal, you buy it. I don't know what the price was on it, but like for an iPhone,
no.
It makes it, you get free phone calls.
Well, I'll tell you on the free Wi-Fi or the $99 Wi-Fi, no. They may exist. They may be out there, but there's no way it's a viable business proposition. So, because it costs them money to give you internet access. So there's some way they're going to either get their money back by putting ads on there. We remember Net Zero, where you got kind of free internet, but it was terrible, and you had to look at ads all the time. So my suggestion is it's too good to be true. Internet's just not free. And what would happen, I'm afraid, is you'd pay $100 and you get free internet for a while, and then they go out of business because they don't have a viable business model, and you're out $100. And now you don't have any internet access. Freedom Pop might be what they were talking about. They make a sleeve, too, for the iPod. It's free wireless internet. Now, the one reason I give these guys a little bit of credit is it's the guy, and their big investor is the guy who started Skype, Nicholas Zinstrom. And he's a smart guy, and he's not a scammer. So this is, I don't know how they're going to do this. They give you a gigabyte of free internet every month. Now, obviously, they're going to show you ads, right? It's 4G. They have a back for the that goes on an iPhone or an iPod Touch, the Freedom Sleeve. This must be what he was talking about. It's not $99. It's free. Free 4G internet access up to a gigabyte a month. But they've got to be showing ads. It's not out yet. You might check it out. Freedompop.com. I have to think this is what he was talking about. And I haven't tried it. I don't know how good it is. I don't know anything about it. I will make, you know, right now it's in limited geographic areas. It's not where I am. Actually, it's not anywhere yet, but it won't be where I am when it comes out. Maybe the sleeve. Let me see what the sleeve. Yeah, the sleeve is $99. I think that's what you were. That's what he was. This must be what he was talking about. You can find out more at freedompop.com. Don't know anything about it yet. Price is $99. You put this sleeve on your iPhone, and you get 4G, or on your iPod Touch. How are they going to do that? Gigabyte free broadband. Oh, by referring friends. 500 megabytes a month, which is not much. And then a gigabyte if you refer friends. There's some. I'm suspicious. Henry, I'll tell you what. I'll try to find out more. It is not Wi-Fi. It's 4G, which actually is better. It means you can get it everywhere. And it is Nicholas Zinstrom, so that gives it some credibility. But it's too new to know. I wouldn't buy anything from him yet. What could it be? We'll find out. Randy, Apple Valley, California. I think you're the last caller of the day. Hi, Randy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We got about a minute.
Quickly, I've got Word 2010, and when I go to the mailings, to the envelopes, and I try to reset the font and click for default, it'll print that envelope, and then it reverts back to the original default font.
Yeah, you'd think it would remember it, wouldn't you? But it gets default font from a template, from the normal template. So what you have to do is modify the normal template. I'll tell you what, I'll put a link in the show notes to Microsoft support note 291291. It's got the details. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.